All right, you guys, hopefully everyone got one of these handouts up front here. I put these things together just so you can get a sense for just how I like to ask questions, right? I probably don't. So if you look at the back of the book questions, right, there's only a certain amount of space they can write in. So the creativity for their questions is very limited because they only have one column or two columns on a page. So they have to be very brief in how they ask a question. So you won't see that like written on an exam, right? It's kind of hard to write, short little pithy statements followed by, asking for a request to write an answer. So this is kind of the way you'll see it in the quiz or exam format. So I know some of the stuff is like multiple choice, which I really don't like, but there could be very few of these present, right? Circling the best answer. So which one of these, if you've been looking at this, which base favors an SN2 reaction mechanism the best? So how do you approach the problem, right? Rather than just trying to spew out something like a savant, like really fast, just say, okay, what is this really asking? So an SN2 mechanism is what? It requires backside attack, okay? And in addition, you know that you have to be able to get in. So I always like to picture this stuff, right? So I have a really good, quick go-to picture. And I drew a house last time where there was a door and there was some foliage. Fuego, what? Am I saying the word wrong? Okay, foliage around this back door. Okay. Now, let's say you are whatever, man. It's Halloween, so I can say you're, let's say you're a thief, right? Trying to get in there and you cannot enter that because there's stuff in the way, right? So if we look at the SN2 analogy, right? We know there's backside attack. We know that if we have an access port right here that is blocked with a bunch of stuff, right? You cannot get into that area there to do the displacement of that, just like that picture shows, right? Likewise, if you have sufficient access to the back door with smaller shrubbery on either side, you can get in there. But now if you yourself are like the Michelin tire thingy or whatever, if I can just draw this thing, if you are the Michelin person trying to get into that door, you yourself can't get in, even though you can access it quite well. So now, given this analogy, now in keeping with the SN2 analogy, okay, this is a good SN2 entryway, but you yourself can't get in because you're too large or you're larger. With that in mind now, what do you imagine? I'm looking right at you. Good. I'm glad you didn't look around like you're looking at me. Because yeah, clearly I'm looking right at you, right? So number one, which nucleophile or base is a base to favors an SN2 reaction mechanism and why the best? Why? What's your approach? Well. They're all in principle bases. Okay. So you don't encounter steric repulsion. So which one of those is the smallest? Which one?
D.
So you're telling me that if I don't know how tall you are. Huh? B? So okay, that's cool. No. you cannot change your answer now. You've gone with B. Because I want to follow that up with, so there's a person who's standing right in, sitting right in front of me like this. Which, how do you want to, which one would you have selected and why? Maybe A. No, she says maybe A, not certainly A. So we still could be on the run here. A. Because it is the smallest. What sort of reaction would E favor, if not S and 2? Habla español, señora. Are you speaking Spanish? Oh, okay. Okay, yes, it would favor an elimination reaction, E2 reaction. Absolutely right. All right, so who's done number 2 already? I'm sure someone's taken this sheet of paper and said, I'm just gonna show Walker, man, this was a waste of time to waste all that paper. We have, so what's the same here? Hang on, Cooper, I know you're ready to just jump out here. What do you notice is the same? The reactants are the same. We're looking at the rates and something else is different, right? Something is different. Something above that arrow is different. Okay, and let's say you were told, I'm gonna add some stuff because you don't know what I'm gonna ask yet. What if you're told you want the SN2 products? The SN2 products of this reaction. They're both going to give you SN2 products. You draw those down, and then you say which one's going to be faster. Jack, it looks like you're ready to go, man.
I want to say A because it's a primary carbon instead of a secondary carbon. Therefore, it doesn't have as many branches to go through.
Let me look at this reaction again. So you're saying that the A is a has a leaving group on a primary carbon and B has one on a more substituted carbon. Where's my arm folded person here? You've done your arms. Would you agree with this? A is a primary, has the bromine on a primary carbon center and B has the bromo on a secondary carbon center. So therefore, those two reacting materials are different. Okay, she's doing this to me. TikTok dance. Okay, let me hear you. Both of them are primary. Both of them are primary. I feel good about that, right? Do I feel good about saying both are primary? Who would like to put their neck into the small of my arm so I can just go, yes, the secondary.
Oh, talking about the oxygen.
I know you were. You weren't clear. Okay. But we still got a lot of dialogue out of the bromo being on a primary versus secondary. So that's good. We covered that. You with me? Okay. So now what Jack was referring to was the base that was going to be react as the SN2 nucleophile. One of them was less encumbered than the other. And so therefore, A would go faster because it's less encumbered, less stuff. So you should be able to write that product on the side over there. Now, just notice a simple change that could be done here. That's why I didn't write anything here. Draw the E2 product and tell me which one is fastest. So you draw the E2 products for those. Right? How many E2 products do you think we'll get? Aurora. How many products? All I'm asking is for a number. You can guess. We're doing number 2. How many E2 products do you imagine we would get from number 2? Okay. So Aurora's, so no, we're going to pass. I don't want to. 2. Why? All right, you guys, look, man, no. So put an alpha next to the carbon that has the bromine on it. Just put an alpha there. Now count one carbon away to each of the unique carbons that you see attached to that alpha carbon. And how many do you count? 2. That tells you that there's 2. Nothing to do with the stereochemistry of that bromo. Nothing. SN2, how many products would you get from an SN2 reaction for problem A? Would you get two products? Are you scratching? That's good. That was like, you could scratch like this. Okay, just one. That's absolutely right. I'm not going to say I'm scared because it's Halloween or anything like that. You guys are scaring me right now. Okay, here we go. So you get two products. So what you want to do is draw the SN2 products and the E2 products. SN2 with the right stereochemistry for both the top and the bottom. And E2 products for both. They'll both be the same. Draw both, so you just practice that elsewhere. So number three, for an SN2 reaction, okay, and the little brackets mean the concentration of whatever is between the brackets. That's what that little notation means there. If the concentration of the thing that has a leaving group is double, the rate is, Seneca, since I know you, doubled, yes. And this is just easy math, you guys. If the concentration of the thing with the leaving group is quadrupled and the nucleophile is halved, yes, it's doubled. All right, I'm going to leave number four to you guys to do amongst yourselves, ask TAs, tutors, whatever you have to do that. If you didn't understand this, make sure you go over the entire thing with a TA, tutor, or office hour, or at my office hours on Thursday. All right. We just did this sort of reaction up here, right? SN2, we know what the product is. There's one product, okay? The O with the ethyl group is going to be coming from the back. The chlorine is going to leave and not be a second product of this reaction. The SN2 product is going to be an ether. That O is going to be attached to that butane chain and coming from the back face. All right. E2. There's going to be three E2 products from this, which we'll learn how to do and recognize today. The three are all right. This trans. Same side, opposite sides of this double bond. All right. So now that we're starting to learn some chemistry and converting alkyl halides into alkenes, okay, we'll have a formal alkene chapter coming up, but we are making alkenes. Okay, so mnemonics, so you can go alkenes, right, where this is my double bond here, just to help you remember that alkenes are double bonded things. But let's look at the stability of alkenes when we make them. So you remember hyperconjugation, right? Remember that you have a radical attached to several carbons that have CHs on them. This is stabilized by a hyperconjugation mode. You had a plus charge on a carbon, and you had those similar substitutions. You'd have this hyperconjugation times three, right? Where these electrons are stabilizing that plus charge. This radical is stabilized by moving from here to there, right? So the same thing happens with alkene stability. So if you have like this one, this is a non-substituted alkene. It's no substitution on it. There are no substituents on it. It's just carbon, double bond, carbon. That's it. All the other things are hydrogens, right? Non-substituted. This is the least stable alkene. When we start putting substituents on our alkene, such as a C group here, right, we start getting a hyperconjugation system. This will fold in and these will move. So the more opportunity that that alkene has to engage in hyperconjugation interactions, the more stable it will be. So you can see that as I start to add more substituents onto my alkene, I can go there and there. I'm going to use yellow chalk on the same diagram, but it's happening separately. Or we can go there and there. Those are two separate pathways. Okay, two hyperconjugation avenues, if you will, that stabilize a disubstituted alkene. I can go on, but I'm going to skip to the tetrasubstituted one just to kind of drive, or actually, yeah, let's go to the tetrasubstituted one. I really don't need to do this, but just to drive the point home. I think you guys see it. There are four avenues, right? This, this, okay. This one, and no other chalk up here, so I'll use kind of a blended mix here. And that. It's four avenues. So a tetrasubstituted alkene is more stable than a non-substituted alkene. This is the extreme of instability. This is the other extreme of stability. All right. So you can see that there are several disubstituted alkenes, kind of what I drew up here already. So we have, if I can split down this double bond, right? So if that's the middle, the yellow line of a highway, I see that I have two substituents on the same side of the alkene. So both of them are on this side. I can have one on the high side and one on the low side to give me my trans alkene, my trans disubstituted alkene, or I can have both substituents on one carbon, right? That's a this is disubstituted, and we have the third disubstituted one, which would look like this, where either one of these can be above that. All right. Now let me get to my notes. Where am I? So all that. Okay, so now let's get back to E2. Yes. You tell me, which one did I draw the most hyperconjugation for and which stabilized that double bond and move it around? Most and least stable. This is least stable. So let's draw the hyperconjugation equivalent for this one, just as an example. I mean, let's see, do I have chalkboard? I do not. Let's go up here. Let's take this one, okay, and draw what that is. Let's draw a double-headed arrow and say we have C. The electrons love to move.
I guess I was under the impression that hyperconjugation was just like a radical
thing. Nope. So we have hyperconjugation here. We have hyperconjugation for carbocation. hyperconjugation for radical, now hyperconjugation for alkenes.
Okay.
No boxes in chemistry. Everything is kind of, everything kind of explains everything else that happens, right? All right, so that was a good question. So now, see if I can draw this out. For an SN2 reaction, we know that the nucleophile comes right in line with that leaving group from the backside. It comes right in line with it. Okay, it's like if this was a stick that was extended, this would drive right along that the axis of that stick, right? To come in here and kick this out. That's what must happen for an S2. That's what, how an S2 reaction mechanism works. Same thing's happening, the exact same thing is happening in the E2 reaction, except the nucleophile is embedded within the molecule. So let me show you. So we're in E2, we know we're eliminating a hydrogen. Let's just put something like this here. It could be anything. Okay. Well, we know that the base now, let's put OH minus, is no longer attacking at that center. It's acting as a base rather than a nucleophile. So this is pulling this proton off. These electrons right here have to be in the same plane because they need to come from the backside of that in the same plane as the BR is. Notice that the H and the BR are in the same plane. This can now backside attack the sigma star orbital, as we said, the empty orbital, and kick these out. Okay? This is picking up that H plus. What was once a shared electron now pairs up with this one, and these two, just like these two came in from the back and kicked those out. These two coming from the back, kicked that out. So I know these textbooks, you know, have E2, SN2, just to keep things organized, man. But I really cannot grasp the difference. I know that I'm making an alkene out of one and I'm making a nucleophilic substitution out of the other, but I see the mechanisms as almost virtually identical in my head. It's just that one's making a sigma bond, new sigma bond. The other one's making a new pi bond. That's the only difference. So what have I done? I just make a Newman projection, right? That back, I shouldn't call it the back. One of the carbons has a hydrogen that is anti to the bromo or the leaving group. This can be generically called just the leaving group there. That's all we're doing. These are in the same plane and anti to one another. So now let's put this in practical use. Let's look at the product of this reaction here. So now here is where a little bit of, if you have three different types of pens, pencils, three fingers that you can use to rotate stuff around will come in handy. Or a miniature molecular modeling kit that will soon be available and robust, but in process being constructed. Let's say you have something like this. BR I'm going to just call this phenyl, just to keep things simple so everyone doesn't look at that and go like, oh my God, I've never seen that before, which you have seen, but just don't want to draw it out and create any sort of havoc. Let's say you see E2 there. I know the first question is, what's the base? And I'm going to say, it doesn't matter. If I just say, draw the E2 product of this, who cares what the base is? It's whatever base is sufficient to do this reaction. You can throw anyone in there that you wanted to. Okay. I can say, if you want to put a base, I say you use NH2 minus if you want to. Okay. Doesn't matter. You're just drawing an E2 product. Now, we know this is E2. Identify my leaving group right there. I know that's going to go. This is going to go. I know I need to draw an arrow like that. I know that for damn sure. Right? I know this is alpha. This is my alpha carbon. I'm going to look one carbon away to see if there are hydrogens on my beta carbons. Because that's the only thing that can eliminate along with that bromo. So here's a beta. Beta one. Okay? I'm looking for beta carbons. Here's beta two. Okay, there's a hydrogen on beta two. Let's circle that one. And I didn't draw this out because there is a beta carbon there, but it's on a phenyl ring and there's no hydrogen there. So you don't have to worry about it. There's no beta hydrogen here. So you can get rid of that one. So we're going to form one product. Now, what are we going to form? We know that these electrons are going to go there. My base is going to pick that up. This bond leaves, and I form a double bond. So that's part of the game right there. Now I just have to figure out where the groups that are attached in the end are. Now I see, so some of you will see this. If I draw this double bond instead of like this, I draw it like this on the side, you could easily see something like that being left behind on the right side of the molecule. Can everyone see that? And this is left. So I know that this and that methyl group are on the same side of my thing. So yeah, I know that's funny, man. CH3. Okay, I'm drawing this thing on the side like this. And then this tertiary butyl group is there. Now, if I'm going to draw this like I have advanced somewhat in chemistry, I know that I've drawn alkenes looking like this. We're all solid lines. These are trigonal planar. I can draw all of my bonds in the same line, and I don't normally look at an alkene from the side. So the correct way to draw this would be like, would look something like this. There we go. Now that one was pretty straightforward because the hydrogen and the bromo were already set up in a way that we could see it, visualize it easier. But I realized that, man, if I can get my bromo and my hydrogen wherever they are, like this, it's downhill from there. Getting them in the same plane is going to be tough. Here's what I mean. If you have a compound where things are not so clear, some students develop their own methodology to get this clear for themselves. Do whatever you want. So I'm going to take a similar molecule over there. Let me draw this like so. And then, all right. And I want the E2 product of this. All right. As I said up here, I know that this is my leaving group here. I know I'm going to be drawing something like this. And I'm going to be, this is alpha, this is beta. Okay, there's my beta hydrogen that I'm going to eliminate. I want to get it where this line, and that line are all on the plane of the board. So I'm gonna do a little bit of rotating. This is where I say the three pens, three fingers, whatever helps. This is already in the plane of the board. I don't have to mess with that. So I'm going to redraw this thing and so I can get something that looks like that. I want BR to be there. I want it to be there. This is not like switching two numbers. This is no longer that. This is actual chemistry. That other stuff was bookkeeping gamesmanship, right? So I want my BR to be on the solid line. So if I take my fingers like this, okay, and say BR is this back one, and rotate it down like that, okay, I can kind of follow what's going on, right? Maybe not. Okay, so rather than taking three fingers, I'm going to use two. I'm going to say bromo is yellow and tert-butyl is white. Okay, and I want bromo. So they start off like this. I want this to be down like this. And I ask myself, what happens to the T-butyl group when I do that? It goes to the back like so. So I know that if I keep track of two of the three objects and locate them correctly, I know by default where my third one's going to be. So the phi, the phenyl ring, is there. And now I haven't done anything to this one. I remember walking out of physics class, man. Man, this sucks, man. That class was crazy ass hard, man. I think I'm not gonna walk out. You know, I see that and I go, man, that was me years ago, man. It's like, I could tell you a story or two. All right, so now we have this and that in the same plane. Now we're ready to go. We can eliminate. Boom, boom. Now I have to keep track of where my groups are. So my double bond is like so. Now I can draw this as I drew over there sideways, which is not the most pleasant way to draw an alkene because it should look like this. You can do that and then put your final answer to look like this. I know I have put in the past when I have problems like this, make sure all your bonds are not wedge or dash minus one if they are. Okay. I have that clearly underlined italics bold with a neon sign, just and people still will do that and go, oh man, that's not fair. But I said, yeah, you're right. In principle, this would be all right if I didn't put those instructions on there in bold, highlight, neon, yellow, et cetera. So what we're looking for is this type of a structure. Now, let's say the box is up here. Okay. And I want to just go kind of like this initially, because this is what I see. This is what I know you guys see. You see that on that side, kind of drawing this like chicken leg, like chicken feet. Okay. And the other side I see fair enough. That's where you see it. Wedge dash consistency. But your final answer that should not have these wedges and dashes in them should now look like that, where this and this are on the same side. Okay, and that are on the same side, right? Okay, so ran out of board space. All right, so let's say you have a ring system You want to do the E2 product of that. Yep, here it comes. Damn, that damn ring system again, man. So you see that? So this is axial above the ring. I put it axial because I want to show you now that there is a hydrogen there and there. This is alpha. There's a beta and a beta. It's beta one, beta one. They're both the same. So I can eliminate from either side one of those axials, right? So notice these are on opposite sides, just like what we saw and in the same plane, just like what we saw when we set up this configuration here. So in order to do an E2 reaction, the hydrogen and the leaving group must be on opposite sides of the ring. Okay, so that's hydrogen one, hydrogen one. They're equivalent. So I can eliminate from either side. Okay, if this is axial above, that's axial below, as we know. Axial above, axial below. Axial above, below, above, below. This is axial as well. So that's what those, I can eliminate either one of those two to get my E2 product. Okay. Or the on the other side, which would be the same molecule. But now let's take a look at something that's a little more curious than that. And you'll see, you guys, I mean, I know this is new and you may be saying to yourself, golly, man, this is really tough, but it's not really. I mean, if you have something like this, here's my leaving group. CH3, E2, you'll have some boxes, decoy boxes, maybe three boxes here, E2 product. Leaving group, I heard everyone. Alpha, beta one, beta two. Who's asking me why I numbered those beta at one, beta one, and the other one, beta two? Who's asking that? God, how do you number those beta one and beta two? Good. It was arbitrary. This could have been one, that could have been two. Doesn't matter. And now I know I have two beta positions. They both have hydrogens. Okay. They both have hydrogens. Here's a hydrogen on this side. And here's a set of hydrogens over here. All right. Now, what I just said over there is that in order for me to do an E2 reaction on a ring system, the leaving group and the hydrogen that both eliminate have to be on opposite sides. This one are on the same side. Nothing's going to happen there. This one is on the opposite side of that leaving group. So these are going to fold in, and that's going to leave. So I get one product out of this, which is, let me get rid of these boxes so I can draw this bigger. Okay, there was three boxes there. Two of them were decoys. Just kind of make you think, right? That I can pencil the hydrogen there if I want to. That's the remaining one, the circle on it. And then nothing happens to this side. I still have that as a wedge on it, with a wedge on it. Okay, and that hydrogen remains. Yes. Go back to this. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Those are in the same plane. Where are you? I lost you. Those are in the opposite sides, same plane. So if I drew this on the side, it would look like that. If I tilted that ring just a bit, it would look like this. Okay, with this, the ring is still here and the ring is still coming off of here, right? So the ring continues out that way, but I just turned this ring system just a little bit this way so we can see this bond from the side. It looks like this, where that and that are on opposite sides. The goal for doing elimination on a non-ring system like this was to get the hydrogen and the bromo opposite, anti-periplanar. I had that, we're trying to get it. Trying to get the leaving group and the hydrogen that leave in the same plane, but opposite sides. That's our goal. That's why I rotated this carbon over here, because we can rotate around a single bond. I was able to rotate this around to get the BR down there. And when I did that, I got these groups in the proper orientation. To do an E2 reaction, I need this hydrogen and the leaving group to be on opposite sides, just like there. Yeah, just like that. And so over here, this hydrogen and this leaving group are on the same side. And the opposite side, I think she's got it. She stopped looking at me. Okay. All right. Okay, that's easy. All right. Yeah, that's E2. That's E2. Yes.
I guess I'm so confused about why you're getting start hanging in the plane, because there's two hydrogens on
this one. Right here, right?
Yeah. Why can't you have those be like, why can't you be like
just like we talked about over here? This is what we've been doing, right? We wanted to get this and the leaving group and the hydrogen on opposite sides.
Okay.
You saw it there, see it there.
And then my next question is, when, as one of your friends, because it would alternate like above the plane, below the plane, shouldn't the wedge be, the wedge hydrogen shouldn't be in the other place?
What?
I get up.
You might as well just get up.
Like, shouldn't this be a wedge here? This would be that.
Why?
I thought it had altered. Is that what you're saying?
Go sit down. I'll explain. I mean, I'll see if I can explain this. I'm not quite sure what you're asking. This is, let's say it's axial below. Okay. If I go one position over, the axial position is up. Yeah. So that's axial up. That's axial down. That's perfect for elimination. It's perfect.
But why is the next one over?
What, this one?
No, like that same
one. This one?
Yeah.
That's equatorial below. Not in the same plane as these two are, as demonstrated for that first example over there. I see a hand that's going to say, Dr. Walker, maybe you can explain it like this. Go ahead. Okay. Alpha, beta. Yes. Yes. More advanced chemistry, you'll see distant stuff, but we're not going to do that now. Yes, okay, Jeff.
So one last piece of clarification. On the beta 2, we're choosing that side due to the fact of the axial position, not the fact that there's two beta hydrogens.
That's exactly right. Okay. Exactly. So, okay. So this could have been CH3. And you would have gotten, and this would have been, okay? Senor.
How do we know how much, or how many E2 products are there?
First of all, you count the number of beta carbons there are. You ask yourself, are there hydrogens that are unique? Are those beta carbons unique? Beta 1, beta 2, beta 3, there could be beta 3, right? There could potentially be as many as three different E2 products, if all of your beta carbons have hydrogens on them. and they're all unique. So yes, that.
So in this case here, there'd be two
betas that are not dissimilar, or that are dissimilar, but only one of them gives you a hydrogen in the correct orientation to do that elimination.
Okay, so there's only one.
Yes.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
We'll have a 2-minute introduction to SN1 versus SN2. I know the jackets are going on. Look at this. Look at this. The jackets are going on already. But just want to introduce this to you. So SN1 is defined by the dissociation of the leaving group from the alkane portion. That's the rate is defined by the concentration. The rate is proportional to the concentration of the R group that has the leaving group on it only. And you form, if the leaving group leaves, you form a carbocation. So the rate at which the carbocation can be formed is going to define the rate at which this reaction can occur. So I need you guys to ask yourselves, which one of these is more stable? A or B? Why? Starts with the letter H. Muy bien. Very good. Carbocation stability is going to drive these reactions faster. Okay? So SN1. So new SN2 now. Okay? Is this a good SN2? It is not. That's not a good SN2 starting material because it's crowded. You can't get into the sigma star orbital from the other side of the leaving group. Okay? So SN1 favors tertiary bonded leaving groups. SN2 favors primary. Those are the extremes. Okay. And there's a lot of questions that you'll see that ask which one of these will favor SN1? What's the SN1 product of this? What's the SN2 product of this? Can the SN1 product be formed, et cetera? Okay. So we'll see more of this on Wednesday. And Wednesday is going to, this quiz will cover SN2, E2, SN1, E1. And remember how to make monohalogenated compounds, please. Remember how to make monohalogenated compounds, please. Pardon me? Quiz on Friday.
I have a question. Regarding the E2 reaction.
Thank you.
Oh, you're sneaking behind. Okay.
Sneaking behind.
Is your little puppy in? Yes, it is.
Regarding E2 reactions and the nucleophiles, is the strength of the nucleophilicity of the thing based on how basic it
is? Yes. Okay. Yes.
It just purely how basic.
How basic it is, yeah.
Right. Well, SN2.
But,
I miss, like,